All right, you got your coffee? Well, you might need it, and you might not. We're about to find out. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Kate Archer Kent, and caffeine is the most commonly used psychoactive stimulant on the planet. But what's it doing to us? Well, researchers in Switzerland have taken a fresh look at the effects of caffeine and what it's doing to our brains. Do you need caffeine? Say you can quit at any time. Or are you caffeine-free? And if you are, how exactly do you wake up and stay that way? Asking for a friend, of course. 1-800-642-1234 is a number to our studio. You can also email us ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Yushen Lin, PhD candidate at the University of Basel in Switzerland, and for 5 years she's been on the team researching daily caffeine intake and its effects on human sleep and circadian rhythms and our brains. In their recent study, they examined the impacts of caffeine on brain structures and functions. Yushen, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me here today.
Well, thank you for joining us as somebody who has his coffee at the ready at all times in the morning. So before we get to your latest research, I would like you to take us back to before you started researching caffeine 5 years ago or more, and tell us what has been known about the effects of caffeine on our brains prior to your research.
Okay. So to explain why we eventually want to look at the impacts of caffeine in the brain, we have to first explain the impacts of disrupted sleep in the brain. So we used to think that our brains are like hardware, but it's actually more dynamic than we thought. Our brains have certain flexibility in response to what we need and how we use it. For example, research has shown that the brain cortices and connectivity seem to be more robust in the morning than in the afternoon, which scientists postulate that it might be an evolutionary characteristic of diurnal animals because we need more resources for various activities by day than by night. Also, if we extend the time of wakefulness by 24 to 72 hours, we can observe changes in the morphology of several brain regions. So we got interested in caffeine because caffeine interferes with sleep-wake regulation. People taking caffeine on a regular basis are often to improve alertness or combat drowsiness. In our brains, there is a molecule called adenosine, which sends sleep signals that make you feel tired as the waking time gets longer. So caffeine masks our sense of sleepiness by blocking these sleep signals and makes your brain think that it's not tired, so it can continue working.
But let me stop you there, Yushen, because if my brain is telling me that I'm not tired, what is it in the rest of my body that's telling me that it is?
Well, that's a good question, because adenosine is kind of omnipresent in our brains and also in our bodies.
So, and this is the signal. This is the signal that tells us, hey, we're tired and we need to rest so we can recharge our battery.
Yes, exactly. So basically, we feel tired. Of course, your muscles can feel tired, but the feeling that you want to go to sleep is a signal from your brain. And that's how caffeine works in the brain, by blocking the adenosine in the brain.
Yes. So then you've taken on this study because you know that sleep deprivation can have an impact on the brain. And you know that earlier in the morning, our brain is more charged and at the ready than it is later in the afternoon. And then it begins to explain why we may crave caffeine in order to keep or make it through our day. So you brought this study. Conducted this study. I'd like you to walk us through, Yushen, how this study was conducted and what the participants were asked to do.
So in the study, we invited 20 participants to the experiment, and each of them went through two experimental conditions. In one of them, the participants took 150 milligrams of caffeine 3 times per day, in the morning, at noon, and in the afternoon.
How much is 150 milligrams of caffeine?
Oh, so 150 milligram caffeine is roughly equivalent to around a double espresso or like a grande size of Starbucks latte. But this scale can be varied a lot because from brain to brain or based on how you brew your coffee. So for example, like French press, siphon, filter coffee are all different. Huh. But that's just a rough estimation.
Okay, so they're having these double espressos 3 times a day.
For 10 days. And as compared to in the other condition, they took 10 days of placebo. So So half of them were start with caffeine and placebo, and half of them were start from placebo to caffeine, and none of them knew which condition they're in because the capsules for placebo and caffeine look completely identical. And this entire process called blinding, which is to prevent participants from having some kind of bias due to the expectation of the treatment effects.
Sure, as a coffee drinker, I might expect that I would assume to know whether or not I'd been given the placebo first or the caffeine first.
Yes, you might expect that you have some effect, and then you might, when you fill up a questionnaire or when you do the performance, you engage more because you believe that caffeine could improve your alertness or
yes.
So.
Yushen Lin, yes. let me reintroduce you. Yushen Lin has been conducting research at the University of Basel in Switzerland that's trying to determine the effect of caffeine has on the human brain. We thought you may be interested in this, considered where we are this morning and what I'm drinking with you. So how long did this research take to complete, Yushen?
Oh, it's actually very long. Well, it all depends on which science industry you're engaged in. But like for human research, it already tends to take longer. And in our study, these 20 participants take us around 2.5 years to collect the data.
Okay.
Because each of them need to go through like the 10 days for each condition, and some people drop out because it's actually quite difficult to follow, because during the entire process, during the entire study, they're not allowed to take additional caffeinated food or drink because we want to really unify how much they take. And they also need to stick to their habitual bedtime because, as said, disrupted sleep can affect brain response, and we don't want that.
So you try to control for any number of variables to isolate the impact of caffeine or lack of caffeine on the brain. This was a study that took place over about 2.5 years with 20 participants. And Yushen Lin, what did you see in the brains of participants who consumed the caffeine?
Yes. So what we found was, so it's called gray matter. So the gray matter in the hippocampus, which is a region highly involved in memory functions, was lower after 10 days caffeine intake compared to 10 days without caffeine. And people who had this higher level of caffeine or caffeine metabolites also exhibited a larger reduction in gray matter in this hippocampal region.
Wait. Are you telling me that we're losing brain matter as a result of caffeine intake?
Well, yes or no. I think if we're going to understand what this means, we need to first understand what is gray matter. So gray matter is a brain tissue that forms the outer layer of our brain, and it mostly consists like the cell body of the neurons, but also something else like glial cells or capillaries. So when we use this, because in our study, we use a method called magnetic resonance imaging. It's the MRI brain scan.
Sure.
Exactly. And with this method, we can only tell like the change in gray matter as a whole. So we were not able to differentiate what exactly changed. Is it the neurons or glial cells or just the capillaries change in this region? So I would rather interpret that the change in gray matter using MRI method as, for example, like robustness of this detected brain region.
Oh man! So gray matter changes low. You've isolated gray matter changes in the brain as a result of caffeine. That's the bottom line. And this gray matter is this outer shell of our brain that also has the capillaries that would be delivering the blood to our brain, which I would believe we would need in order to continue to think.
Exactly.
Oh man. So, and you mentioned about this over 10 days, but now, you know, with my coffee in front of me, Yushen, I'm wondering about, well, what about 10 years? What about 20 years? What about my gray matter after 40 years?
But that would be a question I would not be able to tell you, because I mean, so far we're really at the beginning of understanding how human brains respond to daily caffeine intake. So we also don't want to assertively interpret that this change in gray matter means good or bad.
Okay.
I have to admit that our results compared to other studies probably raised more questions than to answer one. But I think this is important for the public as well, because we should start to ask more questions about how caffeine affects our brain.
Especially if we've been intaking it for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, or 40 years, and we're just beginning to study and understand what that might mean for our brains and the changes to it over just a period of 10 days. From the study, and our guest, Yushen Lin, the PhD candidate at the University of Basel in Switzerland, who's been studying the impacts of caffeine on our brain structures and functions. If you have questions, bring them here, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. In March, Mountain Dew released a brand new energy drink called Rise, marketed as an alternative to a morning cup of coffee, but with twice the caffeine. For those who drink a pot of coffee a day, I thought I might add some perspective. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn. And the National Institutes of Health warn that energy drinks can have serious health effects, particularly in children, teenagers, and young adults, sending some to the emergency room. We're examining those potential effects with our guest who spent 5 years studying what caffeine can do to you. You think it helps keep you alert or merely keeps your caffeine withdrawal at bay? What's your relationship with the almighty caffeine, and would you ever consider a change? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the studio. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Yushen Lin, a PhD candidate at the University of Basel in Switzerland, and in their recent study, they examined the impacts of caffeine on brain structures and functions. And Yushen, can I ask you what your relationship is with caffeine following your study?
That's a very good question. Whenever I give a talk, anywhere talking about the caffeine effect, I sound vicious. I sound like the villain in
no.
this industry. Yes, and people always question, do you even drink coffee by yourself? Yes, I'm an addict. I have to say I'm definitely qualified to to talk about the good and the bad sides of caffeine. But I also have to admit that I used to drink more than I am right now, because also because of the stress during PhD study. I think it's a very bad combination. And of course, the study findings, it's not awareness, of course.
But perhaps, yes. Yushen, with your continued caffeine use, you give us all hope. But you did find some physiological impacts of the brain as a result of just 10 days of a caffeine intake. But what about 10 days without caffeine? What happens to the brain then, Yushen?
Yes, so I'm very glad that you mentioned it, because I think most of the people look at this this study would only focus on the side of caffeine, the caffeine side, the caffeine condition, what happened after daily caffeine intake. But they have to remember that, as I said before, the participants started with caffeine, then half of the participants started with caffeine and placebo, right? And another half started with placebo and then caffeine. So for the people who started with caffeine then placebo, they also have higher gray matter volume in their placebo condition, which means that it actually gives some kind of restoration already, like after 10 days of abstinence, no matter how much you drink before. So it seems to us that this change is not permanent. And if you prefer not to, because as I said, we cannot quite tell if this is bad or good,
right.
But if you want to prevent this to happen, or you don't want this this reduction to last too long, or you want to make it kind of a little bit diverse, your brain status to be a little bit diverse, at least in our study, 10 days of placebo could already make a difference.
Could you go 10 days without caffeine? Let's take a call here. Tim and Eau Claire, good morning. You're on with Yushen Lin.
Good morning. I was thinking while you were talking about 40, 50 years of no caffeine. First of all, it really hurt to think about that. But I know that we have some data sets within our population already. There are certain religious groups that don't allow for the intake of any stimulants or anything like that. And then there are certain groups that are heavy coffee drinkers. I'm thinking that if you were to do a large study looking at people of religious faith that do not drink coffee versus, you know, maybe social groups that do drink a lot of coffee.
Sure.
Maybe
so there's
the Marine Corps.
I was thinking about morning radio, but Marine Corps works as well, Tim. Thank you. And Ushenit provides an opportunity, as you said, that this is just the start of research. And there are populations out there that probably are primed for studying what the impacts of caffeine or the lack of caffeine means to our physiological effects of the brain. Where does this research go from here for you?
You mean for me or for this religious population?
For you personally, but you can certainly respond to the religious populations that do not take any caffeine.
Yes. So where should I start this?
Well, where's the study go from here? What do we do about, studying people who have had caffeine for 40 years or people who have been without caffeine for 40 years? Are there other hypotheses that you see?
Mm-hmm. So actually, there have been quite a few this kind of epidemiological studies looking into the population who drink different amount of coffee every day as compared to people who don't drink at all. So there are studies looking at this, but somehow the findings are quite mixed.
Yeah.
So the outcomes they look at are mostly cognitive functions. For example, their memory functions, or they do some cognitive task looking into their executive function or so. And some studies do show a benefit, but some of them, if they control for like their social status or their education, and these benefits are gone. So they don't see a difference as well. And there are also some studies show no difference. So I guess this is another approach compared to clinical studies where we ask people coming and we give caffeine, right? And in a very controlled environment. And what the gentleman just asked is another type of approach to do the study, that you take people in who you don't give them caffeine, but you just leverage their existing habitual pattern of caffeine intake, and then see if they have any differences. But there is a downside of this kind of study compared to clinical study, is that there are a lot of factors that could drive both their caffeine intake naturally and other things. So,
Yushen, you've talked about controlling for these variables in your study that we're talking about this morning and in the other studies. And as a news consumer and as a caffeine consumer, it seems to me, or it can feel like every time there's a good news story about ingesting or intaking caffeine, there's a bad news story about intaking caffeine. But this,
yes,
as you said, your study doesn't look at good or bad. It's just really measuring the brain. And you'd mm-hmm. mentioned hippocampus and memory before. And did you are we struggling with our memory as a result of caffeine intake? Were you able to nail that down at all?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. So actually, at the beginning, we didn't expect where to find any difference. So we didn't expect to look at the memory function or so. But just because we observed the change located in the memory-related region, we leveraged the existing data from a working memory task in the same study, and we try to explore it with such a change in the hippocampus, how they performed in the working memory task. And surprisingly, during the daily caffeine intake, they also perform worse compared to 10 days without caffeine. But there is, I try to be fair, there is an important note. In our data, we could not just say that the reduced hippocampal gray matter is definitely the reason behind the worse memory function, because when we look at the individual level, we did not see that the people who had a larger reduction of gray matter necessarily perform worse in the memory tasks. So caffeine might influence both gray matter and
causation,
memory performance.
Right, causation,
yes, exactly.
Does not necessarily mean correlation. You got
exactly.
It. But you also studied caffeine to determine its impact on sleep. And what did you find there, Yushen?
Oh, wow. Actually, I have to say I prepared for this question. And this would be a little bit a big. So first of all, before I answer this, I have to...
Oh, I'm sorry. We're almost out of time. We're going to get to the bottom line. And I'm so sorry, Yushen.
Yeah, no problem. I guess this is another big topic.
Yes.
Yes. Sorry.
But the bottom line is, did you find caffeine in...
Yes. So actually, Yeah, it was my colleague's work. Dr. Janine Weibel. So she looked at this human sleep and circadian rhythm, and the interesting thing she found is that although she did not find the typical acute caffeine effects during the daily exposure to caffeine. So for example, when she looked at the daytime alertness, she did not see a difference between caffeine and placebo. But what she found is that some kind of caffeine withdrawal symptom in the evening during daily caffeine intake, and also in sleep. So maybe we are affected more by the caffeine withdrawal and we're driven by the caffeine withdrawal to our daily routine.
Oh man.
More than the pharmacological effect than caffeine.
You should know. We've got so much more to study about caffeine. We thank you so much for your information this morning.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It was a pleasure. And coming up next, we're going to the Marvel Universe after the news with Black Widow opening in theaters nationwide this weekend. I'm Lee Rayburn. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.